On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Tall Can Sports, Grey Cup Week Edition, hashtag TCA Goes Grey. If you want to interact with us on Twitter, you can do that at Tall Can Audio, facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. This episode, like every episode this week, brought to you by Nita Beer Company. Visit them at nitabeer.com or at 190 Colonnade Road here in Ottawa. Rob across the table, how are you, man?
Outstanding, and you know what? You've got that down pat.
By the end of the week, I'd like to think so.
Huge coups. That's why you get the big bucks.
Well, I get the big microphone anyway. Maddie Lang in studio. How are you?
Good, man. Good to actually be in the studio, not on Skype for once.
Yeah, that's a nice touch. And we've got kind of an added bonus that at the beginning of the week I wasn't even on the radar. Scott MacArthur of TSN 1050. Thanks, man. How are you? Thanks for coming in.
I'm great. I needed a beer, so Attaboy. I dropped in. And
look at that guy.
Nita. I like it.
Yeah. The pro in the room over here.
He's already got that
going. Spitting out the liners left, right, and center.
So we got a couple of things we want to touch on. I haven't prepared any of you because I find we get a truer response that way.
Blank stares, really.
Well, way more blank stares.
That's okay. We can handle that. I wanted to ask, I saw on Twitter earlier this week, Down Goes Brown, a great follow if you're not, asked the question. You are the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, a staff member comes in and tells you, due to a clerical error in Carey Price's contract, it's currently invalid. You have the option to just fix it and carry on as normal, or be rid of it before it kicks in next July 1st. What do you want to do? I'm going to start with Scott.
I'd be rid of it. I wouldn't have signed it in the first place. And again, this has got nothing to do with the quality of goaltender
right.
that Carey Price is. I just think at that age, to give that guy, I don't care typically about money, dollars, but to give that guy at that age that much term, it felt to me, given everything else that's gone on with that organization, the trading of PK Subban, some of the other decisions that have been made, sending out Sergachev, which just looks like a real
awful
rotten deal
now.
Right now. I mean, now that he's played a handful of games for Tampa Bay, it's still a small sample size. But, I mean, I think everybody knew this kid was going to be great. Drouin's a hell of a player. I don't know if he should be a centerman, but he's a hell of a player.
Sure.
But you ship out Sergachev, you made some of the decisions that the Habs have made. It felt like a deal that they had to do. And, look, it could be not dissimilar to what's going on with the Rangers right now and Hank Lundqvist, who's 35, 36 years old and has a few years left on his deal, and he's not anywhere near the goaltender he was. Maybe 4, 5, 6 years into the Price contract, they begin to move on from him and just sort of eat the money. But to me, it's the term that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
See, and I think you probably got to stay the course, right? And I'm with Scott again on the term. Nobody likes the term, but I think top end goalies. There's only so many of those kicking around. And I think you have to sort of, even if you were to implode some of the rest of the lineup, if you stick with what you have in terms of a top three goalie, right, I think you have to, I'd stay the course.
Well, I wonder at, I'm going to pass it to Maddie here, at 31, if you're entering a rebuild, is he 36 again now by the time you're ready to go at it, right?
But I am the GM, right?
But and Maddie can pick it up. Are they entering a rebuild? I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, you just
traded a very clear future number one defenseman for, despite what you're trying to do with him, a scoring winger.
Yep.
And don't talk to me about trying to build a team around scoring wingers, because I'll break out in hives. Brian Burke, Phil Kessel.
Alex Ovechkin.
No, great example.
Yeah. They're not Danny Heatley. Close, right? They're nowhere close to being as bad as they need to be or where they actually thought they were. And I think that's the problem, right? Goaltending isn't even in the top five problems the Montreal Canadiens have. So I actually side with Rob on this one. I think you just stay the course with him, and you might have to build around that mistake.
To me, we don't know how healthy he is, and any time he's missed time, they've gone right in the tank. They haven't started a rebuild yet. I'm not convinced there isn't one coming up really soon. Like, they've got nothing to trade to make themselves better, to help them go for it in terms of prospects. They're not good enough, clearly, to compete right now, and you know, there's talk out there that maybe Carey Price has some nagging injuries, that this could be a thing going on, and you got him for 8 years, 31 years old now, 10.5 against the cap. I'm walking away, I think.
Do you think Bergevin knows that they're not that good?
All evidence suggests that he thinks they're ready to contend.
Well, because to me, if you're looking at Bergevin, who's made the big trades that Scott's alluded to, right, I think you sort of become committed to your own blueprint, right? You have shipped out
PK
Subban. You're
the GM, probably because Bergevin's been canned, right? Like,
okay, see, and really that was, taking you literally, right, that I am the GM,
yep,
who signed that deal, and I don't think now 4 or 5 months later that they're thinking, oh.
I mean, there is a part of this that feels as though there was a perfect storm working against Bergevin. I mean, I don't think, and I could be wrong on this, but I don't think straight up hockey deal you do Subban for Weber.
Right.
Other stuff was going on,
yep,
there.
For sure.
Okay? And he was not a popular guy in his locker room, and I don't know if he did a lot to ingratiate himself to the locker room in Nashville either. And that's just PK being PK in some ways. And perhaps the Habs felt, because there was so much going on and so many rumblings about it over time, maybe they just reached a point where they felt they had to move on. I know that deal will be slaughtered for time immemorial in the analytics community, on Twitter,
yep,
all that stuff. But I always say, and I don't give people free passes for making stupid decisions. Again, we can talk about the Burke-era Maple Leafs if you want to watch me turn a new shade of purple. But I think sometimes we need to understand that decisions get made and there are a variety of reasons, most of which we don't know anything about.
Right. And how much pressure, you know, look at the tourist situation here in Ottawa. Right? How much pressure does the casual fan not really understand when they're looking at these sorts of deals, when they look at it and go, tourists, maybe not going to resign here. Maybe there's other issues going on. The casual fan sees him as a great player, great community guy, and they're like, hey, and he's out the door contributing into Nashville, but you got to get something for that. If you're not going to resign him, a la, you know, what happens then?
Yeah,
well, in terms of those pressures that are internal.
Well, the situation now with Gene is, you know, you're going to have to open up the wallet and let the moths fly out, and then clear some change, because you're going to hit UFA with Duchesne, and he's your second most important unrestricted, yeah, free agent in the summer of 2019. There's a guy named Erik Karlsson who is, it's not disputable, I'm a Toronto area guy. and my Toronto area biases play through on my radio show, but I will repeat what I have said 1,000 times and will say 1,000 times again. Eric Karlsson's the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, and I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, well, thanks for stopping by, Scott. We'll see you next time.
No, there's no debate. There, you know, I'm like Poppy on Seinfeld. On this, there can be no debate.
And we'll check the cushion underneath you there by the time you get out of here.
It was a nice couch at the time.
Yeah. Exactly.
So who, as we are, you know, sitting here on Black Friday, the day after American Thanksgiving, when apparently if you're in, you're in, and if you're out, you're out, who's in bigger trouble right now for this season, maybe not long term, for this season, who's in bigger trouble, Montreal or Edmonton, Maddie?
It's Montreal. When you got Connor, nothing else matters, right? Like, you can always build around that guy. He might be the best player in the NHL already. And as long as you have that, even if you have a really dumb GM, they can always replace him and build around you.
Oh, I totally disagree, right? It's Edmonton, right?
It's in bigger trouble?
Yep. To me, in terms of, I always thought Cam Talbot, rock solid backup. I was always dubious about his starting, you know, 40 wins last year. All that's kind of good.
Wait, Rob, you did take him in our fantasy pool this year as a goalie. So,
yeah, I was looking for the wins. I was looking for the wins. Yeah, but then you couple the issues they have on the wings there, right? The slowness, that's not going away. The D, who again, like Talbot, may have overachieved. We'll wait and see what happens when Sakari gets back around Christmas, right? But right now, I don't think they can tread water fast enough to keep their heads above water.
You're in a room full of Leafs fans, Rob. You know that, right? So I'm gonna begin to do that Toronto thing where I weave the Maple Leafs into every potential conversation topic here.
Yeah, right? You okay with that? There's a huge audience here for that too.
And you're holding that beer can, caressing it like you're just gonna swig it here in a second.
My face is turning red. Actually, I'm gonna start rubbing it against my face. Is actually what's gonna happen.
Exactly. The Maple Leafs are in a position right now where, with the upcoming contracts and some of their young kids and RFAs and how they choose to supplement their roster, they're in an advantageous position compared to the Edmonton Oilers, who to me, and I understand the idea of signing a Lucic to get him in and to play him with McDavid, and I don't think that lasted particularly long last year, and they now play on different lines. But they went and they overshot the mark on Milan Lucic. You know, if every career is a golf course, this guy's playing the 14th or 15th hole, right? I mean, you know, exactly, right?
Yep.
And Chris Russell is making way the hell too much money. Just to utilize two examples there.
That's a hill we die on in the studio.
We fight about that all the time.
I'm anti-Chris Russell contract to the day we die.
But the other thing is if the cap goes up to 80 or 82, and if it goes up to 85 in a couple of years, you know, whatever the case may be, things become easier to deal with, and you can begin to wedge certain other players into your scenario because you've got a little more money to work with. But with where the cap is now, the Oilers have committed what appears to be bad money sprinkled around its roster. And the combination of McDavid and Draisaitl, who absolutely are worth the value they're receiving, but they just take up so much of the cap. And this is part of the frustration, too. It's a bigger conversation. Do you like the hard cap? Do you hate?
Sure.
I mean, I hate salary caps in general, but I would rather have a soft cap where it kind of helps teams retain their own guys better and not have it punish them.
Yeah, I think the NBA has come the closest to getting it right.
That if you're going to live in a cap world.
Right.
You know, I just see the Oilers here now, and I look at, okay, so Yamamoto comes in next year. Is he going to be a guy on the cheap on his entry-level deal who can do some things for them? Just as an example, Kajula, these guys, that's what they need. They need people. And I know Yamamoto is buried back in junior for the rest of the season, but this is the type of thing they need. They need some of their young kids to step up, and you can't predict when young kids are just going to kind of find their way, or if they're going to find their way.
Charlie McAvoy, Thomas Chabot.
Well,
that sort of thing.
Yeah. For me, I think looking at where they are right now and looking at the rest of this season, and the reports that I was reading today are that Carey Price will return on Saturday night for Montreal.
He's to play tomorrow night. Yeah.
Saturday. So that's a huge piece coming in for them. And if he's healthy, they're not as far back as Edmonton is right now. And if he gets on a bit of a run, to me it's more likely that Montreal could squeak in than Edmonton, who right now is in the bottom three in points with Arizona and I forgot someone from the East
Buffalo.
Over here. Buffalo, yeah, like just floundering, right? And so to me, when they're getting a major piece back like Carey Price, to me it's more likely that they get on a run. I think it's an interesting point that Scott brought up, that in the last day or two, Bettman has said something along the lines of, based on where their revenue expectations are, that the cap may hit $80 million next year.
Right. Now, you know what? Just in doubling back to the whole Lucic-Russell talk, I think Chiarelli obviously understood, I believe, when he signed that contract, that he's going to overpay Lucic, and he had to kind of bite those last couple of years on it. Right? Think now, player evaluation aside, Patrick Marleau, obviously great signing for this year, probably going to be a great signing this year, next year. But I think we all probably agree, come year three in that contract, you're not loving that when everybody else is looking.
I think he's going to be a great Arizona Coyote that
okay,
year.
Yeah.
But you know the structure of the deal, right? It's all signing bonus, and I think it might be $1 million or something in base salary.
Yep.
So you keep him to July 1st.
Arizona's going to love him.
And you ship him. If you're there, you ship him to a team that needs to get to the floor.
Yeah. One other hockey thing that I wanted to put out here before we get into some baseball. With that report that has come out about Bettman and the I think it was between 4.5 and 5 billion in revenues they're expecting, which would push the cap way up much higher than expected. I'm putting out as a hypothesis, true or false for you guys, Austin Matthews has a larger AAV than Connor McDavid. Anyone who wants to jump on that first is welcome to do so.
I feel like I don't want to die on that sword at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've said before, and again, it may be too soon with Austin, but I've said before that 3-4 years from now, assuming the cap goes up, there will be players who are inferior to Connor McDavid who are making more annually.
And that's my
Connor
point
McDavid,
too, yeah.
Because it's all about when you come up. And if you're Connor McDavid, you get the $100 million guaranteed over 8 years. You walk away after escrow and taxes with about 50% of that. You come home with $50 million in the bank. You take it, and you'll still be young enough to cash in one more time. Because that guy ain't going
to
get bad at
when
27 years
well,
old.
And if you want to look at
giddy up.
Brad Marchand, Johnny Gaudreau, one season before, you have all the other guys like Kuznetsov, Pasternak, all come up. They're not getting – Marchand and Gaudreau are looking at those contracts saying, man, if I was 1 year, 1 year later, it's probably $2 million a season more.
Well, because I think the big thing here to look at is Connor McDavid is – if I've got this right, it's somewhere around, instead of looking at it as cash, 16.5% of the cap. When Sidney Crosby talks about, or when people talk about the Crosby deal at back in the day at 8.7, that was about 16% of a much lower cap, right? Jonathan Toews had 16% of the cap. Ovechkin was
Kopitar.
Was right. So when you stop looking at it as dollars and start looking at it as if the cap goes to 80, 82 million, then 16% in theory is what Austin Matthews is going to ask for. That's going to be higher than Connor McDavid.
Well, and you also have to expand it out a little bit and understand, like, okay, what percentage of the cap do the Leafs want to tie the three
up,
right? And Billy the Kid, as we sit here right now, I got nicknames for all of them.
Okay.
We're very good friends.
That's Willie?
All of us, yeah. Okay. Billy the Kid, William Nylander, isn't playing particularly well as we sit here right now, but he got off to a great start. Mitch Marner. That's Mitch Marner. Yeah. He got off to a terrible start.
Mitch Marner.
That's what I said.
And now he's playing great.
Yeah.
And he's on Austin's flank.
They're going to skate them together.
So,
yeah, I saw that.
You know, you can bring me back on here in a month and we can rant and rave about how both of them are playing great. And so is Austin and his back is fine. And The Leafs have won 12 straight, and now all of a sudden the percentage of that cap feels... You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah, well, because you know what? First of all, the problem with your argument is you don't have to worry about Billy the Kid because he'll be skating in Arizona while Oliver Ekman-Larsson skates
with
the Leafs.
Now he's just...
And you guys, straight up, apparently, listening to any kind of Toronto talk, right? Nylander
Hey, why do they have to go get a number one?
It's the media.
Why do they have to go get a number one between now and whenever the trade deadline is at the end of February? Why? You want to use Arizona as an example? Let's just use Arizona as an example because they're a thriving franchise down there in the desert.
It's going great.
Hey, look, we sit here and mock Arizona. The best player in the National Hockey League right now comes from Arizona, right, Rob?
I don't believe that to be the case.
The bad thing about doing a podcast is being left speechless because there's no visual. If you have it on an audio platform, you have to speak.
Scott, I thought you were talking about Anthony Duclair.
Is he from Arizona? Ooh. He plays for Arizona.
This is it. Exactly. Sorry. No, you were talking about Austin Matthews.
I mean,
perhaps.
It's just a hockey factory down there. Thanks to the Coyotes. Why can't, again, using Arizona as an example, why does it have to be OEL? Like, isn't a Nick Chalmerson a perfectly functional defenseman, cog on that Blackhawks? You know, like, I don't know if you need to go one to make one your 1A to make your 1A2 and then the domino effect. I don't know why you can't slide in a 2-3 who just bumps everybody.
Well, especially if you already have Riley and Gardner who just want to rush the puck. Do you need another rush guy? Can we have someone who might defend a little bit?
Yeah, Pierre LeBrun was
on my... Roman Polak, but...
LeBrun was on my show today and he said...
Oh, name dropper.
Marinson.
Well, you can go back and listen to the podcasted version of that interview on TSN1050.ca. Hey,
love that.
Yes, you should.
and he was suggesting... You know, what if you went and got a guy to play with Riley and then Hainsey can kind of take the third pairing type minutes? He can play 72 hours on the penalty kill the way that Babb seems to like it to be. and you sort of dance it around that way. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways to slay this dragon. And it isn't necessarily that you're hitting the home run, right, and going and getting – the guy.
Right.
Because Riley has had a hell of a start.
Yeah,
it's had
a great start.
And I think Hainsey deserves credit for that.
For sure.
But the thing I'd like, you know, I mean, I'm 38, man, and sometimes I roll out of bed and my back hurts. I mean, that guy's 30, that guy's 36. Can he keep this up over 82 plus?
I think that's a big point, right? The way the Leafs are playing him, way too many minutes. Every game in, game out, penalty kill. Who knows how he's going to play come March, April, and that's when it's going to matter.
What about Johnny Oduya? Any interest?
No.
Nope.
None.
Okay.
That's
why. Is it something going on?
Thought I'd float that. No.
Okay. I'll just.
What do you know that the rest of us don't?
I'd like to sit him. That's what I like. That's what I think.
In Toronto.
Yeah. Well, elsewhere.
He'd be a great Marley.
By the way, thanks for taking those FNUF dollars off of our hands.
I think I'd do it again.
Interesting.
It may be the Bobby Ryan dollars we're more concerned about.
How many of those Nitas have you had? But.
I haven't.
More FNUFs, please.
One. Yeah, no. Rob,
need a beer. Yeah. See, I'm so proud of that liner. I'm coming back to it in the middle of the podcast.
Hit it again.
Repeat a brew. So he's, and again, I liked the trade at the time for what it was and what it does. Obviously, FNUF is what he is. And Matt and I talked about this on the show a lot, too, right? Loved him as a 3-4 guy, hate him as a 1-2 guy, right? In terms of that salary. And we needed it. Right, in terms of a little stability back there. And last year in the playoffs, he was exactly what we needed, right? In that sort of accompaniment to Mathot and Carlson up front, right? Dion was a little nasty. He brings a little bit of that, right? Which, again, overpaid, no doubt about
it. Yeah, he was just so clearly miscast in Toronto.
I mean, let's also be honest, again, with Perfect Storm stuff, it isn't every year there are expansion ramifications. And we know that Mark Mathot is still a Senator if they didn't put a team in Sin City.
Yeah.
Right?
Apparently a pretty good team in Sin City.
Yeah, well, I keep waiting for that shoe to drop, but apparently that's not going to happen.
That home record's
four goalies deep.
That home record's not going to change. I mean,
No, I know. You just roll in there.
I just
Connor Leafs, McDavid's birthday. And
the Leafs go in there on New Year's Eve, yeah. And I'm really the hell hoping that they actually get carded because most of them are young enough that they still can't get into those casinos.
That was the first thing
up
I
to
saw.
The room, boys. Go to bed. You got a game tomorrow afternoon, and Scotty needs you to win it.
Well, and on so they play there, as you said, New Year's Eve. They have a game at home on January 2nd.
Yeah, and
put
and
that
come,
in the loss column right now.
And it's Tampa Bay.
Yes.
And they've come from Colorado, Arizona, and then the day game in Vegas on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
And then they've – because I was saying, I'm like, do you think Babcock will throw a carrot their way and let them stay New Year's Eve in Vegas if they win that afternoon as opposed to having the charter go wheels up right away? And then I looked at their schedule. I said, there's no point in having that conversation. They play the Lightning at the ACC.
Yeah.
First game back after one of those long or crazy out of time zone road trips. Thanks a lot.
Just dress the Marlies that day and let the boys rest up.
And I behave like a complete child on my show at times this year because there was a point when the Vegas-Minnesota week in Toronto,
yeah.
The Habs got Vegas and Minnesota at home the night after both had played in Toronto.
Yeah. Both of them.
I'm like, they're totally out to get the Leafs, as always.
And Dubnyk had to play both, because remember, it was, what's his name, Stalock, who had been here, and they had some pieces. One was written in The Athletic about he was part of the Roman Polak trade that when he went to San Jose, and they came, he showed up to day one at the Marlies, and they said, yeah, we have no plans for you. You can just go stay at the hotel. And he's like, what the fuck, right?
Yeah.
And so he called his agent called the team, and they just essentially let him go home. His wife was getting ready to give birth, and they had no plans for him. So he was talking about that, and then his wife was getting ready to give birth when he was here earlier in the season. So he ended up leaving a game he was supposed to start against Toronto. I guess Alex Stalock was going to shove it up their asses or something. Dubnyk has to play and then has to play the night after in Montreal. And I think the Habs probably blew him up, right? Like, I can't remember how that went, but I remember noticing the same thing.
What was your take on Dubnyk though?
Okay. So last season, right? Not this season. Yeah, last season when we went to do the our preview shows and do our predictions for the season, I said Minnesota would have the worst goaltending in the league. And till March, anyway, he was on a Vezina pace.
Yeah, you didn't know that Dr. Jekyll was going
to
show up for 5 months.
God, I couldn't look.
It was the Boudreaux effect was what you were...
I guess. I don't know what I was thinking.
He was going to roll in there with a great regular season. And
yeah.
Oof. And there you go.
You got Bruce Boudreaux coaching Minnesota, and you got the New Jersey Devils as a young, high-flying, fun team to watch, even if they don't keep this up.
Yeah.
Minnesota, and I know they're hurt right now, and they'll get their guys back, but Minnesota and New Jersey.
Jacques Lemaire rolling
fun
over in his
fun hockey.
Still living grave.
He's still living grave. He just goes to sleep in a coffin. He's so disgusted by the whole thing.
Would it shock you, really? Would it shock you to learn that's where he sleeps at night?
Count Jacques.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Let's leave it there for a second so those who want to can refilm. We'll come back and talk some baseball. All right, so we're back in, and most of you who know Scott know him primarily, probably at least, you know, before he got the 1-4 job as a Blue Jays guy. Now, I know he had some job titles up here in Ottawa, but I thought I would be probably irresponsible to not talk a little bit of Blue Jays while we have Scott here. What is your opinion as we just finished, I guess it was the owners meetings and it's the GM meetings coming up next, or do I got that backwards?
Backwards, okay. But yes, GMs and then the winter meetings,
winter
meetings,
the
owner meetings.
Right. Do you expect the Jays to be active, or do they truly believe that it was just injury trouble this year and they're pretty much set to try and go after this again next season?
Well, wait, and before you get into that, because that could take us in a bunch of directions.
Yeah, that's why I wanted
to hit you with a couple names first.
I just wondered if Rob wanted to make a comment about his Senators or something before we got going
probably.
On a different sport.
Well, yeah.
the Ottawa Champions.
And really, I've sort of, the side of my face is a little hot, really, in terms of the blasting I've been taking from that side of the room. I am a Jays guy, though, in terms of my baseball rooting. If I hit you with a couple names, and I'll just bear with me, and you can maybe comment on them. And a couple of them I may have a hard time pronouncing, really.
Okay.
Shohei.
Ohtani.
Ohtani, yeah. Gift Ngape.
Ngape.
Ngape. And I'm probably most interested, and these two are tied together, Lorenzo Cain and Kevin Pillar.
Mm. You didn't mention Josh Donaldson.
Okay, well, we can get to him. as a guy still under contract, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, what order do I want to take these? Let's start with Lorenzo Cain. Somebody give me the reason why he picks Toronto over anybody else.
Exactly. You can say that about Shohei Ohtani.
And I think it's, although the one thing is that the posting rules are different now, so money is more equalized.
Yeah, something like $3 million or something. But then it's still his choice, is it not?
It is. Yeah. He's absolutely a free agent, as opposed to the old posting rules where a team in the what is it, like a silent auction, but it's a blind auction whatever, the highest bidder then has exclusive negotiating rights.
Yeah.
So long as you bid and are able to bid, he then can choose from the teams that have put the money down.
Right.
So, what makes Toronto stand out? I can give you 70,000 different reasons why Toronto is a great place to play, but there is New York and there's Los Angeles and there's Chicago and there's wherever else. So Ohtani, because I'm a never say never guy, if you were asked me to rank it 1 to 100, I would say, one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, or 1.1. Like 1.1, and I'm happy.
Based on what you hope.
I would expect. I just don't think he's coming to Toronto.
Yeah. You're looking at one is not good.
Yeah, no, one is not good. 100 is like it's absolutely happening.
I
was going to say, Rob's new to math.
You're number one with a bullet. That's how that goes. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you think there's any place for a guy who's gonna play the field
and
pitch, though?
Oh, please, I hope so.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Super intrigued.
Are you not excited about that?
Yeah, no.
Do you not, if you remember, right, the Red Sox won the World Series in 1918.
I do remember.
Herman.
Six years older than you, Scott. That's it, man. Let's not get crazy.
Well, no. It's just a matter of reading up on history, Rob. That's all it is. It would be like reading about all those playoff series in the early 2000s. It just, you didn't have to live through them.
Here it is again, man.
And you didn't have to live through them, but you just had to.
I did.
Read up on the experience of it.
And Matt, do you have like a burn button that you can play?
It's somebody saying ouch.
At least in reference to the Senators.
Honestly.
Shame.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Are you Game of Thrones people?
I certainly am. Oh. I certainly am.
Okay. Well, that's a whole separate podcast. Yeah, for sure. Back for that one.
Matt is not. But no. He certainly is. Become quite attached.
I'm familiar with the shame
bell. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So Shohei, we kind of dealt with that. I don't think it's likely.
Right.
Lorenzo. Okay. So what would put the Blue Jays over the top? Would it be?
It has to be money or nothing else.
A fifth year on a contract? Would it be a few extra $1 million per year on a 4-year deal? Like, I'd be, Lorenzo hasn't exactly been a picture of health.
Right.
Well, and he's saying too, right? He's got to play center field.
Well, yeah. Put me in coach.
Yeah.
Do you want to a couple of verses? I'm all
kind
of.
I see a duet here.
You're locking eyes, Rob. I don't like this.
You didn't give me enough to know if you can nail a note or if you're tone deaf.
I'm absolutely tone deaf.
He does a spot on Kenny Loggins as well.
off the air.
Matt's gonna stick with the Pearl Jam impersonations.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Well, Jeremy spoke.
It's true.
In class today. But so there are people in the organization who will tell you that they would be okay with moving on from Kevin Pillar if they found a suitable replacement. Again, is Lorenzo Cain coming to Toronto? A 1 to 100. I'll give you better than a 1.
Right.
But I won't give you too much better than a 1 until I see it.
Okay.
It actually has to happen for me to believe it. And then the bigger picture is, if you're bringing in Lorenzo Cain, that tells me, all right, so he's going to be a part of that group that bridges and brings in the early stages of the Vlads and the Bo Bichette Juniors. If you're going to get a Lorenzo Cain, what are you going to do with Josh Donaldson, which is a name we'll talk about here in just a little bit, because I want to spit some fire on that.
Please.
but so Pillar is a guy who, to me, because if he isn't a fourth outfielder now, he is the moment that the defense regresses even slightly. And because he plays center field, as he will tell you, like a tight end or a wide receiver plays football, it's just all out and he'll take the hit. He'll bang and crash. I mean, that catch he made at Wrigley Field.
Oh my God!
Against the Cubs, I mean, let's be honest. That's a brick wall with some leaves on it. That's not the padded comfort of the Rogers Center,
right?
And he's diving and he's doing all this. That body at 28, 29 gets to 31, 32 in just a couple of years, and it gets on the north side of that wrong age where the metabolism stops and all that, and he begins to break down a little bit. He can't hit.
No.
Well, can we talk about that?
He sure can hit. Ask Tulowitzki. Yeah. Smoked him pretty good from behind there. That was that's a solid hit.
You know, they say spice up home run derby in the All-Star weekend. I'd like to see Javi Baez and Kevin Pillar in a swing off.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Are they hitting that off the tee, though? Or how is that working?
Well, the ball can't be still because I want to see how much they're willing to chase.
On Kevin Pillar, just before you move off that, I've read a few people who believe this. I wonder sometimes myself. I'd like to get your opinion. Do you think some of those dives are a little over the top? Do you think they're all completely necessary? I've read a few people that think I'm maybe showboating just a little bit, right?
I feel less that way about him than Ezekiel Carrera.
Yeah, okay.
Who, you know, not only will give you the TV dive, the ball will pop out of his glove as a result.
It's going to be really interesting.
He completes the trifecta there.
Right.
You know, it might not be three things, but it just sounded like a good word to use at the time. But, you know, Kevin Pillar is not Devon White.
No.
Kevin Pillar is not – give me a – I mean, Kiermaier's a real gamer.
Yeah.
A real gamer too. I mean, it's always those two for the gold gloves.
Yep.
And Kiermaier's, when he's healthy, gets them. But he doesn't have – you know, they always said about Dalton Pompey that, you know, he profiled beautifully as a center fielder because he had the big strides and he could just –
glide under the
get
ball.
Get the ball. I mean, the one thing with Dalton is he can't read the trajectory of a fly ball, and that's a big issue. But he profiled better because he'd just get to the spot and make the catch. Kevin Pillar is not that traditional glide center fielder. It's more all out, all effort. And so sometimes he's got to make it look spectacular because there are other guys who would be a step or two ahead of where he is and make it look a lot easier. So I do believe he's an effort center fielder,
right.
And I don't think that a lot of that is for show.
It's just bad initial read.
That's where I was going too.
And that started to happen more this year, and it started to show up in his advanced defensive metrics.
Right. You said you wanted to touch a little bit on – or there was another name you had – another Japanese, was it not?
No, South African guy.
Oh, okay.
They came over from the Pirates.
I mean, honestly, I can't really give you a scouting report much on him. I think he was a neat story because he was the first African born and raised player to make it to the big leagues. And
they expect him to be a AAA more than anything else, right?
You know, I just don't – I don't know what's – I don't think there's anything
– okay. It was for sure the story that I was more intrigued by, right?
I just don't think there's necessarily, and I'm more than willing to come on and admit I was wrong if he has a breakthrough here. Guys like Teoscar Hernandez intrigue me more.
Yeah.
I know in a small sample size, he hits his fair share of home runs. He also struck out a ton.
We have enough of that.
Well,
exactly.
But Aaron Judge says that's not bad.
Yeah, okay.
But he's just, I know we get into the hockey mindset that 24 is halfway through your career, but he is, in baseball terms, just a kid.
Yeah.
Very young.
So I'd like to, you know, I don't know, is he a regular on a good team? Well, that's for time to tell us.
Right. Is that just a strong Houston system where he came over from?
And you never mind poaching from a strong farm system. But I think the story, and well, there may be a couple stories here. But I can't predict how the offseason is going to go, but if you look at the first two off seasons of the Shapiro-Atkins era, and of course Atkins was hired in November of 2015, so he was just getting his feet wet. Mark Shapiro had come in. Alex Anthopoulos had made those trades, which turned a mediocre team into a very good team very quickly. The city and the country fell back in love with baseball as a result. And Mark Shapiro went from being the guy that people would have happily seen replace Alex Anthopoulos to, oh my God, Alex Anthopoulos after 5.5 mediocre years had a really good 2 months and he's the Canadian guy and now they're Americanifying this and we're going to go all corporate and this and that. The other thing, everybody start freaking out. What's going on
here? They brought Cleveland just a little further north, right?
So he kind of got caught in a PR windstorm based on circumstances outside of his own control. So there was that. And then Edwin happens last year, and I will go to my grave believing that it was a misread on both sides.
That was botched
but
terribly.
There was nothing that and you know, maybe it's the cynic in me. I just kind of giggled like a goofball to myself when Edwin signed with Cleveland of all places, because the natural thing would be. Reaction would be, well, I mean, Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, they don't spend any money there. Now they go poach one of our best players. It is still true to this day. I will say this in defense of Shapiro and Atkins, even if they maybe should have dragged it out longer, not pivoted to Kendrys, I need four singles to score a run Morales.
like a young Cecil Fielder.
Oh, my God. Yeah, not even that young. Like he's 30 or north of 30 now. But to have Edwin go to Cleveland and Edwin wanted to stay, they, rightly or wrongly, and I believe there was blame on both sides, they got caught up in the PR of that.
They totally misread
both sides. I believe that there is probably, to some degree, a bit of a gun-shy approach to this offseason. Yeah. What are we doing here? The issue with Donaldson is that he's got the 1 year left, so he'll make north of $20 million in arbitration. He played to an MVP caliber, although nobody paid attention to it for the final 2 months of the season because they were out of it by the time he finally got healthy and got his timing down. So it's a reminder of how good he is.
Sure.
I believe that Josh Donaldson blames to some degree this 40-plus person high-performance sports science department for the time he spent on the disabled list because he left his off-season training last season in their hands. Mm. And he's had calf issues and stuff, but he actually managed to avoid the DL. That didn't happen this year. And I believe that Josh Donaldson is the type of guy, because I've seen it with my own eyes, who if he's not happy about something – we'll make it very clear to the appropriate people that he's not happy about something.
Right.
And he probably, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty confident he made it pretty clear to some people that he wasn't happy about it, and now they're not so warm on that act. And my here's what I care about. Shelve the BS. We all know what the man is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Given his age, I don't want a 7 or 8 year contract.
Right.
But if we are working off the assumption that the first year, because it's an arbitration eligible pre-free agency year, is the first year of the deal, I'm willing to go 6. But if we're talking free agency, I can do 5 next season. I don't want to get him to 40. I can get him to 38, and I can suffer on the back end if he starts to dip. And we got to be real about the AAV. He's a $25 to $30 million a year player. So 5 and 125, 5 and 150, somewhere in between, suits me just fine. If you Boston John Lester him and go, here's 4 and 75, knowing he's going to reject it, and then you walk around and say, well, we made him an offer, and he said no. Yeah. We wanted to keep him. Like, either get serious and make him a concrete offer or move the hell on and don't be scared of the PR.
Right.
If the next wave is coming through and it's Vlad and it's Bo and it's whatever, then you got to get something for Josh Donaldson at some point here.
Because then you're still stuck with the Tulowitzki and the Russell Martin contracts too.
Well,
right?
Tulowitzki's just a complete and total albatross now. Yeah. I mean, it's to steal Ray Ferraro's quote, it's a toilet seat around their neck. I mean, Johnny Obvious, he's not a $20 million a year player.
Right.
But this is a guy who looked like he couldn't play the game anymore at times, especially offensively. He's okay defensively when he's healthy, but he can't, I mean, and he's done this for the last couple of years at times. He'll take pitches right down what they call in baseball cock heaters. I mean, he'll take fastballs right down the middle of the plate, and he'll look back at the ump and almost question the call. I'm like, dude, LASIK eye center or whatever is looking for an endorsement opportunity. Yeah, right.
Essentially, you kicked the Jose Reyes problem 2 years down the road.
Well, yes, but what you also did was you brought playoff baseball back to Toronto because that team – and Alex Anthopoulos will tell you this. That team had an enormous – well, you got to look at the stats and you just know it. But that team had an enormous run differential to the positive and yet was 50-51 after 101 games.
Right.
The issue was the defense around the field and in particular at shortstop. And Troy Tulowitzki came in and he fixed that issue. And then when Kevin Pillar's Superman jaw – cracked Tulowitzki's neck. Yeah. Ryan Goins was there to back him up, and he was playing A-plus defense at the time. And they were such a power at left field.
Yeah, you could get past the late bat.
Yeah, they were such a powerhouse offensively that you could sneak Goins into the nine spot, and all of a sudden he decided he was going to spend 4 months walking at a rate he'd never seen before, honestly, and come up with the odd big hit.
Yeah.
So everybody was going at that time, you know, and it just worked. So the Tulowitzki acquisition was huge. And that's – we're now seeing the trade-off for that.
Well, that's it. You're paying the bill now.
And it happened sooner than you would have hoped.
Sure. So as I kind of circle back to before Rob hijacked my question.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Where do you think they are? Are they going to maybe try and retool on the go? Do you believe they think that this is still a reasonable team to take a run with?
I think Mark Shapiro – is one of these, quote, process guys. But I think he's also dealing in a situation that's far different.
Yeah.
This team matters. This team...
Sorry, Cleveland.
No, but this... no, but... And a few years ago, this team didn't matter.
That's right.
This team matters again. And this team is good for the Rogers brand from Victoria to St. John's. And so I think... it depends on what you believe about it, but you can either believe that baseball and business line up because you think that both sides of that equation should be doing the same thing, or you can believe that the baseball ops and the business ops have two different goals in mind and that it might be wise to begin to peel back a bit on the baseball side, which would hurt the business side in the near term. And I don't think that they're going to go down that road. What I hope doesn't happen is that they do this in such a way that it leads to 20 more years of mediocrity, the way that we saw from 1994-95 to, the way it turned out, 2015.
Yeah, early 2015.
But, you know, they tried to get good in 2013 before that season.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, and I know we're running low on time, but that was kind of when you jumped onto the Jays beat, was this first attempt to... holy shit, look at everything we got from the Marlins, and now we got R.A. Dickey, a Cy Young winner, coming in here, and the whole thing was just... I mean, Dickey, say what you want. He at least kind of gave you, what, three years, I guess.
He gave you 3 years of 200 innings, and he would have given you a fourth, but they pulled back on him and kind of benched him.
Syndergaard looked good in this.
But, I mean, Johnson, that was a disaster. Reyes, I can remember...
He wasn't even the top guy in that deal, though, right? It was Darno at the time.
No, yeah.
If I remember correctly, right? He was the guy we didn't want to let go as fans.
Yeah.
And what's he done lately, right?
Well, then I also believe that in the Miami deal, the Marlins were given a choice out of the... because they did the Miami deal first, and then they did the Mets deal, right, for Dickey. I believe that they gave Miami the option of any of the big three pitchers, and Miami took Nicolino. they could have taken Sanchez.
What makes the Marlins the Marlins?
You just the Sampson Loria Marlins. Right. But things on 2013.
Yep.
First of all, Reyes rolled his ankle on that Friday night in Kansas City in the second week of the season.
Yeah.
And that was just crippling because there was so much energy around his arrival and that was just the latest in a string of injuries he had had. Potentially, it was the most serious injury he'd had to that point, and it really affected him. And I don't know if he ever got back to where he was before it. And as much flack as Dickey took, we need to remember that that rotation was supposed to be anchored by two flamethrowers and Josh Johnson and Brandon Morrow.
Yeah.
And Josh Johnson was bad and hurt, and Brandon Morrow went out at the end of May, and I remember talking to him in the clubhouse in Atlanta when they started a road trip to Atlanta, San Diego, and San Francisco. And I asked him, will you be out there on Sunday when you're scheduled to make your next start? And he looked at me square in the face and he said, I believe I will be. Not only was he not out there Sunday, he didn't pitch again that season.
Wow.
So
off by a bit.
You know, Burley, Dickey, that was the year that Ricky Romero was cut in camp. And so Jay Happ, who had come in as the sixth guy, he'd been acquired from Houston and where he had been a starter.
His first trip.
And then he comes to Toronto and he's thrown into the bullpen for the final 2 months of the 12 season. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
And now you're going to put me in the bullpen again to start the 13 season? Or like, what's going on here?
I had a buddy of mine tell me who knew the NL way better than I did. Much, you know, he knows everybody on every team. He said, the thing, and this is going into that 13 season, the thing that no one is talking nearly enough about, the steal in that trade, is Emilio Bonifacio. He's going to surprise people.
Oh, I went on about him too.
And I kind of went, all right, cool. I'm looking forward to that. And then it just...
Burn the tape on that take. Oh, Emilio can lead off for you sometimes. Yeah, yeah. He can hit ninth at the bottom of the order if you want some speed for the turnover. He can play some second.
He'll
play
jumped on board. This guy knew baseball way better than I did. And I went, all right, cool. And
he'll play you some left. Yeah. He can move him up and down the lineup. Oh, yeah, Emilio Bonifacio.
And if you look at in terms of doubling back to when you're talking about what it means, what that team means, and do you want to go back? I was there in the late 80s. Early 90s when they were there. Now, to me, it always sounded at Skydome at the time, and you're in the area. Sounded like there was 50,000 grade 7 schoolgirls
high
in place.
High pitch.
Well, way back?
Way back.
But it was a lot more corporate then, too.
Right. And so Matt and I were there early 2015 to see the Rays were in.
Yeah.
And it was a mausoleum.
Thursday night.
15,000 people there. The game was a dud. We went back mid-August, I think.
Yep.
And we watched the Twins, and that was when they overtook the Twins.
Well,
the
and
Twins
Price had just come to town.
Yeah. In the wild card race, we could hardly get a ticket, and the sound in the dome was this foot-stomping kind of loud, aggressive sound, totally different than 25 years earlier, right? It's just – so to me, do they want to go back, or are they content to just sort of go, all right, as you've already touched on, man, I hope not. I hope like hell – that they don't want to just sort of let it slide. Because
right. Well, the problem they face is that so much of this, too, is outside of your own control. The New York Yankees are an extremely rich franchise, which does not need to be said, and are extremely young and very good. And they've got – and I know he had Tommy John surgery, but when they shipped Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs for Chicago's 2016 playoff run, they got a shortstop named Gleyber Torias, who – you know, Didi Gregorius is a hell of a player for them, but the shortstop of the future isn't even up yet. Yeah. And this is a guy they got from the Cubs. Like, they've got more people coming. Boston is a good team.
Right.
Houston is a great team. Cleveland is still good. There are a lot of very good teams. Baltimore, okay, they took a step back. They can't pitch, but they're always a mosquito flying around the Jays. Tampa Bay annoys the hell out of everybody. They just won't. They're not an elite team, but they just refuse to go away. So it's not getting any easier. Not just from the decisions you have to make about your own ball club and where you're at. It's that everything around you. What we could be seeing here is the front edge of another run where New York and Boston own the division for a while.
See, that was my take. I was wondering if. Yeah, that 2 year window, 15-16, Jays jump up, grab that spot, coincides with the Yankees sliding backwards, right? Which we hadn't seen in 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so now with the resurgence of a very young squad, right? You go, okay, Jays got to muscle up or slide back into 500 oblivion.
Well, and it's always funny. It's like we sit there and say, well, Alex Anthopoulos traded so many prospects in 2013 offseason, 14 for Donaldson and then 15 in the Price and Tulowitzki trades. Yeah. List me the names of the guys who are having significant impact in the big leagues right now. Syndergaard. When healthy.
Yeah. Norris hasn't really turned out to be. I mean, he was.
He's still living in his truck, by the way. Yeah. He just posted Brett a picture on Instagram.
In a van down by the river?
Yeah. Yeah. He's still living down by the van, by the river, by the Walmart, by the whatever it is. Let's not worry about him.
Yeah. No, it's like you said, but you are kind of. It still feels like, even if it. That you're kind of paying the bill right now for 2 years of fun, right? Like, but as you say,
they're okay. Like, we put up with 20 years of shit baseball.
It'd be more okay if you won, right? Like, that's always the talk in hockey, right? Blow your salary cap to hell like Chicago has, like LA did, like what? At least they got their cups out of it, right?
Yes.
When you do, when you go for it and you miss.
But, and I remind people of, or try to remind people of this and hope and pray that I speak clearly when I say it, when I talk about the Leafs, we don't know how this is going to go.
No.
But what we do know or have very fair reason to believe is that we are about to embark or have begun to embark on a Washington-esque run here where you are a going concern every single season. Now, maybe Edmonton's a cautionary tale. We'll see. And it's so, you know, the cap constriction, all that stuff. But if they are a going concern, I can't sit here and tell you if the Leafs are going to win a cup or two or three. But what I do know is if they're going to the playoffs every year,
yeah,
they've got a chance. They're a going concern, and they might advance a round or two and get into mid to late May, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, they're in the Final Four. With the Blue Jays, the value was in recapturing guys of our ilk who remember 92-93, but also in capturing the next generation who had Roy Halladay, God rest his soul, and nothing else to remember, essentially.
Reed Johnson.
And, you know, I mean, I nicknamed the WestJet flight deck the douchebag party patio because you can get in with a tip. You can get in with a ticket, right? You can wander around and have a pint with your boys.
I may have to rename this studio that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. Need a beer.
Yeah.
Prick. Yeah. I didn't come here to drink one. But, you know.
Love it. That's a direct shot right at you.
Yeah, all right.
But you get my point. Like, and people just show up now. And City Place is a massive condo development east of Bathurst, leading to Spadina off on Fort York. And, of course, Skydome Rogers Center is on Bremner, which Fort York turns into at Spadina.
Yeah.
So it's a quick shot walk for people. Some people have condos that can see into the dome on nights the roof is open. Like, you can just get there. It's easy, and it's a start to a Friday night.
Yep.
And then you end up on King West or, you know, Queen or wherever you want to be. And it's a kickstart to your night. And they've figured that out. They've capitalized on it. They brought baseball back. And I understand from the business perspective that you want to try to keep that going. I'm just not entirely convinced from a baseball ops perspective that this is a good enough team to compete in the AL East right now. No, but the second wild card spot is also the other hook in the tees that didn't exist for those mid-2000s teams under John Gibbons that would win 86 games and finish 25 games out of first.
It's true, and we're going to have to leave it there. Scott has been very generous with his time. We promised to get him out of here by a. And now that he's taking shots at me, I want him out of here.
Are we done because we're done, or do you want to keep talking?
Well, if you got the time, we got the time, but I don't want to. I know you got plans, so why don't we.
Just one quick question.
We got 6:20.
Oh, we got time.
There we go.
Well, someone get the man another beer.
Hey, I'm going to a steakhouse. The cow isn't going to get up and walk away.
Freddie Anderson. Is he the guy for you?
I'll take the bullet for the team there. Hold on.
Yeah. What, Maddie doesn't want to?
Yeah, well, he's.
Well, no, Rob's going out. Never mind.
All right.
Rob was like, I don't want to do the Leaf talk thing.
Yeah, there
I'm going to leave you with this question.
Yeah.
What is the better option? Who is the better option at the moment? When Freddie's on his game, he is as steady positionally and as quiet positionally. And I'm thank you. I'm not. Thank you for the beer. I should probably clarify that.
That's Thank you for the back rub.
The thank you podcast. Yes. What is this going to turn into, the Chris Cuomo, LeVar Ball, CNN interview? How many thank yous can we throw in an hour? No, you should be thanking me. No, thank Trump. No, thank him. No, thank you. No, thank you for the steam whistle. Steam whistle. Thank you. Good beer. Zita, Nita, I need a beer.
That's true.
Thank you. God, media these days.
Honestly.
That's a separate podcast, and I'm in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, Freddie is as technically sound a goaltender from my non-expert perspective when he is on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he can get beaten high and all that. I suppose most goaltenders around the league will. I don't see him as being the guy that's going to keep them from achieving here. I think you can win with Freddie Anderson.
I think if you bolster
that defense.
Yeah.
Whether that's between now and the end of February, or whether that's next offseason, or, you know, Timothy Liljegren comes in and wins the Norris Trophy at 19 years old, because obviously Rob has spit that take on many previous podcasts.
Obviously.
You know, you never know how it plays out, but I don't see him being the impediment.
That's it. I don't think he's the guy who single-handedly wins you a cup. But
I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the best goaltender in the National Hockey League.
And we've seen guys like Antti Niemi win.
Yeah, he's a superior goalie.
We've seen guys like Leighton and Emery take it to a cup.
Osgood,
for sure. So, no, that wasn't a loaded question.
Michael Leighton almost won a Stanley Cup with the Philadelphia Flyers in 2010.
This is it.
Against Antti Niemi.
Oof.
Hey, look at that.
Niemi and Leighton.
There's a marquee matchup right there. Right? And Niemi can't get a job now. Right? And that's just... So, no, that wasn't a loaded question. Well, I wasn't trying to lead.
Didn't he just get picked up?
It was a legit...
I'm teasing you, buddy.
Brilliant Habs picked him up, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just know, Rob, when I spell Anderson.
You spell it with an O.
It's with an E.
Yeah, okay, see this.
Before the N.
All right, and you know, I think it's a fair segue, right, in terms of, do you put any stock as a guy who's worked in this market in the good Anderson year, the bad Anderson year, right, in terms of, you look at his stats, and I'm talking about Craig now.
Yeah.
Oh, then I'm not listening.
Sort of his up and down, and clearly last year was a good year. This year we're looking at going, yeah, I think he's playing and he's 883 save percentage.
The one, I've always said, the Condon is the best protection out there. I mean, no. Come on, I just assumed, yeah, I was throwing something that had been said on this podcast before.
Stick to the Nita puns, man.
I was looking for a button to hit there.
You want to protect
the sound effect on that one.
You want to predict to wrap it up. That's where he was going with that.
I had Gino Retta on one day. I had Gino Retta on one day, and I said it, and he didn't even notice I'd said it, and he just kept going. And then I'm like, so he, you know, he gives this great answer because Gino's one of the best, and then I'm like, well, should I be insulted that you didn't notice? Or, well, what did you say? I said, well, the Condon is the best protection out there. And he's like, nah.
It's suddenly gone entirely lowbrow in here. Yeah. So, hey, when you see Gino, can you tell him to grow back the 80s mustache?
If he's not doing it for Movember, yeah, I can't imagine it's ever.
Because nothing better. Honestly, early TSN days.
I don't want to ask you to throw anybody under the bus, but you work around TSN, right? Tell us, protect a name if you have to, protect a certain fact if you have to. Something from a TSN Christmas party, something from a well-known broadcaster once did such and such.
I'm trying to think here. There's some salacious stuff that, you know, has gone on. I'll be honest with you, and forgive me for sitting on the fence here. Thank you for making the top of the fence flat.
Sure. We've had a lot of people sit on it.
Exactly.
It's probably better if I don't go too in-depth into certain stories. Sure. But listen, it's a great industry. It's full of, in a lot of ways, type A's.
Right.
People with very strong opinions. People with... And I think this is important. You know, there's a difference between confidence and arrogance in anybody. And I've always said that arrogance runs in direct proportion to insecurity, right? If you have a massive ego, it's because you're not secure in yourself. But I would say, like, the people I know and deal with are genuinely confident people, because you have to be. You've taken criticism.
Yeah.
We're in one of those industries, one of those very few industries. If you screw something up in most industries, your boss will notice, call you into the office, and call you on the carpet for it. If I flub something,
thousands.
You're hearing it right away.
I'm reading it right away, and I got TweetDeck up, and you know, why'd you say this, or that's a BS opinion, or that's a this or that or the other. Why'd you let so and so off the hook, or you know, all that stuff. And you have to have a thick skin. You have to believe you're good at it. And I've really in the last couple of years, especially since I've come off the Blue Jays beat, and I've started to do my own show, and I've gotten the opportunity to have Gino or like Pierre or some of these really competent, elite broadcasters / journalists, people who are well informed and well plugged in. You really see how talented and how good these people are at what you do, and you kind of say to yourself, "What am I?" I'm just glad to sort of be along along for the ride.
Right. And you know what? And so we do this. We kick this around, right? And so we see it, right? We have somebody like you in, right? And there's that huge step up, right? Just in terms of level of knowledge, right? There's a difference between a couple of guys who just talk shit, right? And then there's people who do it for
a living. But I do think there's a place for it.
No, for sure. For sure. And all I was suggesting with that was – yeah, I totally get that, right? There's what you get from living it day to day, and then you know,
and it being your livelihood,
Yeah. No, this is it.
But like when I sit in here with you guys, and Maddie reached out to me earlier in the week, and we'd never met in person, and Matt apparently doesn't remember requesting me to be his friend on Facebook.
That's true. I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say yes. We actually met, and
because I can tell you this. I mean, I will accept friends on Facebook generally speaking, if you can tolerate my anti-Trump rants. But you know, I can say with the ultimate confidence that I have never typed Matt Robinson into the Facebook search area.
No one has, Scott.
And requested to friend every Matt Robinson I know. So Matt,
he searched for the unfriend thing
So Maddie says to me, I can't remember how we became friends on Facebook. I said, well, it must have happened at some point.
Well, yeah. And we have at least one or two mutual friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
the thing I love about what you guys do is that, like, it doesn't matter if you haven't talked to the general manager of such and such a team.
You don't think Lou's been in here?
Hey, if you get that interview, I want to come in and hijack this show.
That's a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta make that happen now. Yeah. I don't know.
But if you think about what you guys are doing, it's effectively what we all, if we were diehard sports fans, wanted to do when we were 8 or 10 years old.
Yeah.
I used to, and now, like, I'm old enough, we're all kind of in the same age range here, give or take a little bit, but like I'm old enough where I used to sit my brother down, who's 4 years younger, and I would hit record play on a cassette tape on a stereo, and I would pretend to host a radio show with him. And, you know, I'm 10 and he's 6, or I'm 12 and he's 8.
Yeah.
We're not talking about particularly compelling stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here. But that is kind of the foundation that gets laid for wherever it is you end up.
I used to do the same stuff, yeah.
Like, we want to talk about what you three are going to sit down when you get together and have beers and talk sports.
Yep.
So do it here.
Yeah.
And throw it out there, and people will react.
A couple thousand people who like it, find it interesting, and they tune in, and it's not for everyone. There's a lot of people doing the same sort of thing, but I truly believe in you know, you can correct me if you disagree. Certainly, I'm sure you will. That people listen, whether it's podcast, radio, whatever, as much for the personalities and the conversation as much as the content.
Yeah, right. And I think if and the thing I love about radio and podcasts fit into this because it's an audio medium is that it really is, as you say, about the personality, and therefore it's about the relationship.
Right.
So if a listener feels like he or she knows me because I've given something of myself, something personal, like Bell Let's Talk Day last year was an organic thing that happened, and I opened up my direct messages, and I had 4 dozen direct messages by the end of that day because – you know, I'd given Gino Retta the floor when he came in to say something about Bellet's talk day. And he said something that tweaked me with my own experience.
Right.
And I said, well, Gino, based on what's happened to me in the past, da-da-da-da-da. And he took that ball and he went right into – he flipped the script and he started to interview me for 25 minutes. And then at the end I said, I'm going to open up my direct messages. And the things – so people feel like they know you in a certain way. And you have a certain sense of humor. Mine is quite dry. It's tough sometimes when you're alone. Yes. I rely heavily on audio, drops, things like that sure. to try to convey a certain – message. And so I'm heavily reliant on Uncle Shawnee, my producer, or Mike Skrzyniak, Skrzy, my technical producer, for help in that regard. And they're great with it. But it really is like you need to feel like you know me.
Right.
And you need to respect me. And I'm failing if you don't. Because if you don't respect me, then you don't care what I have to say.
Then you're not listening.
And if you don't care what I have to say, you're not listening. So if I have a hot take that pisses you off, you're mad at me. If I have a hot take that you agree with me on, then you're pissed off at the world. But the bottom line is you're listening regardless because you want to hear what I have to say because you feel like we've established through this audio medium a relationship.
The give-a-shit meter has to be high.
Well, and I wanted to like I don't want to ask you the whole story on it, how it went down. It was pretty clear when I listened on the air the day after the Roy Halladay accident. Right. You were a show. You were a destination. I knew you would talk about it. Like I bounce back and forth. I know you're not asking for complete loyalty. I go back and forth between the fan and between TSN 1050 and whatever. I'm one of those guys. Right. I grew up in the GTA and whatever. You were a show that at 1 o'clock the day after that happened, the day after that piece of shit in Boston went on his. I got to listen to that show. I want to hear what Scott has to say about that. And I certainly wasn't disappointed, right? Like you let him have it for the right reasons, but there's something that kind of tweaks that goes, there's an opinion I want to hear right now. This is someone I want to hear from right now. And at 1 o'clock on that day, I need to hear what Scott's got to say about that. Right?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think the one thing that I would say, and I've been very fortunate, it's been special to be back in Ottawa because I spent 10 and a half years here,
right.
Working at Chum, CTV Globe Media, the Bell Media building down in the Byward Market, and CFRA Team 1200, now TSN 1200. When I did Senators hockey broadcasts, I wasn't a Leafs fan doing Senators hockey broadcasts. I was a professional broadcaster, I hope. I was a broadcaster. Whether I was professional or not is a subjective matter. But I never was influenced by the team I'd grown up cheering for. However, when I moved back to Toronto, I am a Leafs fan,
right?
And I am speaking to Leafs fans,
yep.
And I want you to know, as a Leafs fan, that I feel your pain. I feel your excitement. I feel your psychological scars because I've lived the same life you have, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter than you, depending on your age. But I get it. And with the Blue Jays, it's the same thing. And I'm a Toronto guy through and through. And so you relate in that way. I love the city. I feel fortunate to live there. I feel fortunate to work in that market. I'm from Oakville, so I'm a GTA suburban Toronto kid. I'm home.
Right.
And if I ever moved back to Ottawa, I'd probably get on the air and beg for forgiveness in case there was somebody out there listening, remembering.
Right here. This is the guy.
Yeah, Rob, sorry I was a dick on that podcast.
Don't worry, he barely knows how to work Twitter.
Exactly. It's true. It's true. I can direct tweet, but it's a hard time. Do you get anybody then saying, God, MacArthur, you're such a homer, right? Do you get that in working in the GTA?
Well, market? I get lumped in with the Toronto Sports Network stuff, and I I don't often respond to that sort of thing, but it gets back to the Halladay example with that Mike Felger prick in Boston,
right?
We all get lumped in together, and so when a guy says something like what Mike Felger said the day after Roy died. Well, that's the media today. Well, no, that's Mike Felger.
Right.
And that's the state of Boston Sports Talk Radio. And all you've got to do is listen to Boston Sports Talk Radio often enough, and you'll realize that that's about what you should expect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, it's just about the honesty of living in the city, of wanting to see the teams do well, but of expressing frustration when they don't, and just giving you my God's honest point of view on the game last night, on the issues of the day. I'm not making up.
Right.
My stance on and I do not ever call them the anthem protests in the NFL. That's not what's being protested. Nope. Racial inequality.
Yep.
And police brutality on minorities, particularly African Americans, is what's being protested there. This is not something to do with the American flag,
that argument, the
Star Spangled Banner, or the military.
And we've touched heavily on that,
yeah,
in a variety of shows here, right? That it gets lost what's actually being protested in that situation, right?
And you know, I'm big on I'm a white Canadian. So I don't know what it's like to be a brown Canadian. I don't know what it's like to be a black man living in Compton. And so what if I told you that, you know, maybe a black 18-year-old living in Compton has a more North Korean experience than a white American experience? No, I don't know if that's true.
It's thought-provoking.
But that is economically marginalized.
Yeah.
Caught up in the prison industrial complex because he happens to possess less than a gram of weed on his person and ends up with some idiotic prison sentence. So then he goes into prison and he gets caught up in all that BS, and maybe he joins a gang, and then he gets out because the sentence expires and he's in this gang and he commits another crime, and then he's back into prison, and on the cycle goes, and it never breaks.
Right.
Like, this is the world.
Yep.
And white Canadian Southeast Oakville boy doesn't know what that world is. But does that mean the world doesn't exist for some people that way?
Yeah.
Absolutely the hell not. And that is why it's important for the white Canadian or the white American to sit and listen instead of everybody's yelling at each other. People have different backgrounds and different stories. And just because you don't experience or live something doesn't mean it isn't happening to other people in this world. But everybody wants to yell now. And everybody wants to throw something out there.
Hot take guy.
In anticipation of a reply, yeah, as opposed to actually listen to what somebody's going to say.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
That was actually really...
yeah.
I know you were getting really passionate there, but that was actually pretty well thought out, and actually one of the smarter takes on Tall Can Sports.
Well, certainly on this show, yeah.
I think that's just reality, man. Like, we got to get right, you know. You know, somebody once asked me on Facebook, and I won't name his name because his name won't mean anything to you, and he's a complete asshole. He asked me once if I wasn't, why aren't you proud of being white? And I said,
I had very little to do with that.
I said, well, see, here's the thing about me being white. My dad's white.
A lovely re-entry into the conversation here.
My mom's egg, well, she's white.
Yeah.
A little biology for you. They came together and they made me. I'm not entirely sure what I accomplished.
I didn't accomplish much in this. I was...
So what gives me any sort of advantage or any more value as a human being? And I am a big believer of doing things on merit and accomplishing things on merit, but I also understand that there are people who don't have as much opportunity.
That's right.
And so just overcome your challenges. I had to overcome mine. My dad was a drunk and he was an a-hole and this and that and the other thing. I got through it. Well, it doesn't sound like you did because you're an angry prick, number one. And number two, you don't know some of the stuff that somebody else has had to go through. I just think there's an entire total lack of empathy. I think it's heightened by the fact that we're all on social media and we can all yell and scream and react at one another. I don't think we're any better or any worse than we were 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. I think there's obviously been social progress that's been made. But I still think a lot of the inherent biases still exist. It's just that they now manifest themselves and proliferate themselves all the time because we all have a Twitter account and we can all scream whenever we
want.
The
volume has been turned way up on it all.
And it's the perspective on the whole thing, right? If my hardship is my parents make too much money and I couldn't get OSAP and I had to grind for it myself versus my mom worked at a day's end.
Get your parents to buy you a violin so you can play it to yourself.
This is it. Versus my mother worked at a day's end for $4 an hour, right?
Right.
This is the difference in terms of my perspective of hardship, slightly different.
Well, right? I've never been pulled over and questioned as if I'm a suspect in something. Well, no, you haven't. John Smith?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Mr. Blonde Hair and Blue Eyes?
Right.
Of course you haven't. Well, because you're not a minority. And people are suspected of being things that 99.9% of the time they're not, because they don't look like the quote-unquote Western European that this country was built on, which is completely untrue. You know, we interned Japanese in the 1930s because Japan was part of the Axis. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do to Islamic people now? We're going to treat them the same way because there's a handful who – sorry, I'm way political now. Because there's a couple of people who, you know, have ties to ISIS or have mental health issues and get deep down on the rabbit holes of the internet and start to read – silly stuff that isn't reflective of anybody's values.
Right.
It's just crazy.
Anything at the extreme is.
And by the way, I'm sounding like a raging lefty because we all talk about righties and lefties in this day and age. I'm not a lefty. I'm pragmatic. Like, let's just get real about the world.
Yeah.
Try to start to understand one another.
So. Lowell's slot here, I think, at 580 is open, right? Yeah, you got any interest?
Oh, my boy, Rob Snow. Yes. He's hosting him. Snowy's a great man. Hey, I love Snowy.
I can hear Snow on the TSN 1200 broadcast in Radio Row this week, right?
And him. I saw him today.
Him
I hadn't
talking
seen...
so loudly, he's coming through across the hall.
Rob's one of the guys I've looked up to in this industry since I broke in, and I think he saw something in me, and he was really good to me when I started at CFRA way back in kind of 01, 02. And he's just such a great broadcaster. And I know sometimes he falls to the right wing of things, but I think he, from a social perspective, he has, like everybody else, most others, that haven't gone to work for Breitbart or Rebel or whatever, try to understand. And I just think that's – and so it seems to be in the sports world now, because I've often said, like, you know, if Michael Jordan was the African-American athlete who secured the multi-million dollar endorsements for African-American athletes, and maybe that was actually O.J. Simpson prior to him, but that's kind of a name you don't utter these
Avis
days.
Avis Rendegar.
Was it Hertz or Avis? No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You may be right with Hertz.
I don't think it was Avis.
Neither of them want to admit that it could have been. But, you know, if Michael Jordan kind of paved the way for the African-American athlete that way, I really feel like LeBron James, Steph Curry, and others are guiding them now using their platforms to say, hey, we can speak up on stuff.
Right.
And the two people who have it easiest out of all of it, three people actually deserve credit, who are doing the right thing by using their whitedom to speak up is Greg is Pop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's spoken a few
Steve
times.
Kerr and Ron Jeremy's twin there, Stan Van Gundy of the Detroit Pistons.
I thought is where you're going with
threw
that.
A little humor in there. But like, no, but these guys, and look, I just do a radio show in Toronto. It is what it is. I'm not trying to make anything go viral. I'm just trying to say my piece when I'm on the radio. When Pop and these guys started speaking out, I realized, okay, you have some semblance of a platform. I'm not out here to say it's massive. I'm not out here to say it's minuscule. I'm not here to compare, you know, whatever. But for me, it was, no. I've thought for a long time that because I'm a white Canadian male, I don't have a right to speak up because I haven't lived the experience. And I've realized, no, I have a responsibility to speak up because people need allies.
Yeah.
Right.
It needs you need to create
people
a safe
who can't
place
speak up
for
those
who aren't ready. Yeah,
you know, and so I don't know where this is going to go. I have some thoughts on it, and maybe where I want to take it as the weeks, months, and years go on. But I think it's really important that we do better to try to understand and listen to listen, not listen to reply.
Well, I think that's probably – I'm going to cut Rob off there. I think that's probably a good place to wrap this up because it's a good message. It's a good thought to end things on. Can't tell you how much we appreciate you doing this on short notice. For I said to these guys before you got here, he would have had every right to say, hey, stranger, go fuck yourself when I put a message out there. That's not what happened. He said, let's try and make something happen. Really appreciate it. Some great thoughts on a few different things, certainly –
If we do it again, though, could you come with an opinion?
What's Jim Rome's old thing?
Have an opinion and don't have a take and don't suck.
Have a take, don't suck.
Yeah.
This episode of Tall Can Sports brought to you by Need a Beer. Anything there, Scott? Or any pun? Any?
Actually quite happy. I'm still about half full here.
I'm only here because I needed a beer.
We need to get Scott out of here. If you want to interact with the show, you can do so at TallCanAudio on Twitter, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio, or support the show at Patreon.com/TallCanAudio. Thanks once again to Scott MacArthur and these other guys. You'll hear throughout the weekend. We'll see ya.
This one's empty. For more, visit TallCanAudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at TallCanAudio.